Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Surprise Jeb Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday, April 8th, and we are red hot. We're cold now. We're cold now off of a red hot weekend. We're still trying to simmer down, all right? The ashes are still in the air. This past weekend was absolutely electric. I had two of my buddies I know, my roommate's cousins came down, him and his best friend, and, you know, I'm boys with them too. We all had a great weekend going out to the bars, watching sports, hanging out. It was so much fun. But we also had WrestleMania 40, which was absolutely electric. It was the best WrestleMania I've ever experienced, and if not for the whole card, it was without a doubt the best WrestleMania main event I have watched in my entire life. And unlike past episodes, we are of course going to be reviewing UFC Vegas 90, which also went down this Saturday. The appetizer before this upcoming Saturday, UFC 300. But unlike past episodes, we are not going to be ending the episode with our UFC Vegas 90 review. No. We are actually going to be starting it with our UFC Vegas 90 review after some new fights that have been announced we cover, and we're going to be ending this episode with a full WrestleMania 40 Night 1 and Night 2 recap, because it was just one of the greatest experiences I've had as a wrestling fan, and I haven't even been that consistent over the years, okay? But some about this whole storyline with Cody Rhodes versus the Bloodline got me hooked back in, and I felt like a little kid watching the main event. So we're going to be going over all the matchups, talking about it, so excited for that. As well, we're going to be talking about the Final Four. The championship game does go down tonight between UConn and Purdue. My prediction is UConn, so we'll see if that happens. But we're going to be talking about the other previous two games, as well as the women's March Madness, which is officially wrapped up. So without a doubt, let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into it. And of course, kicking things off as we always do. I mean, it's honestly, it didn't really start as like a thing we always do, but over the last freaking 10 or so episodes, it's just what we do now. We talk about the new UFC news that has gone down since we began. And in the last, 4 days since we last spoke, there have been a numerous amount of fight announcements. So let's talk about them. First off, going down June 22nd in Saudi Arabia in Riyadh. Riyadh is actually... is that the capital of Saudi Arabia? I don't even know. I honestly get Saudi Arabia and Abu Dhabi kind of confused. They are kind of similar to me in the kind of big events you get there. But nonetheless, our huge card going down June 2nd, as I mentioned. You have a new fight for the prelims as Magomed MG Gadzialasulov will be making his UFC debut. He is 8-0 from Bahrain, same place as... Shamil Gaziev, he's also from Russia, you know. But yeah, he'll be taking on Brenson Ribeiro, who is 0-1 in the UFC, lost his UFC debut. But 15-6 professionally, holds a win over Antonio Orojo. I recognize him. He used to be in the UFC. But should be a fun fight. And I love guys with the name Magomed Gadzialasulov. It's so much fun. So much fun. As well, a fun one going down as well in Saudi Arabia, as Saeed Nurmagomedov will be taking on Montel Jackson. This could be an absolutely amazing fight, ladies and gentlemen. Saeed Nurmagomedov, 18-3. I mean, he holds wins over Cody Stamann, Douglas Silva de Andrade, Sadiukab Goramov, a two-time performance of the night winner. This guy's an absolute killer. His opponent, Montel Jackson, 7-2, 13-2 professionally, 7-2 in the UFC, wins over Rene Yaha, Brian Keller, Julia Arce. I'm pretty sure Montel Jackson is like tied or in second for most knockouts in the men's bantamweight division. This guy has got hands like steel. Going to be a clashing of styles. I am pumped for that matchup. A fun one here announced for UFC 303. This one's going to be on the prelims, International Fight Week, featherweight matchup. Cub Swanson takes on Andre Feely June 29th. This is a fun matchup right here. Cub Swanson, 13-10 in the UFC, 28-14 in his career. This guy holds wins over Dustin Poirier, Jeremy Stevens, and Charles Oliveira. Cub Swanson's been at it a long time. 6-time fight of the night bonus, 2-time knockout of the night bonus, 1-time performance of the night bonus. Cub Swanson, legend of the game, still going strong at, I'm pretty sure, 40 years old. Cub Swanson, legend. His op, Andre Feely, not his actual op, just his opponent, Andre Feely, 11-10 in the UFC, 23-11 professionally, wins over Bill Algeo, Lucas Almeida, and Dennis Bermudez. Another guy who's been in the UFC a long time, did just get brutally knocked out by Dan Ige, so maybe Cub Swanson will catch him right for the pickings. We'll see what goes down. As well, announced for July 13th. 13th card, which does not have any venue at the moment. July 13th, first fight announced, will be a women's flyweight bout between number 10-ranked Vivian Araújo and unranked Jasmine Jasuda Vicious. Jasmine is 4-2 in the UFC, Canadian, wins over Pasalka, Shrana, Miranda Maverick, probably her biggest wins. Vivian Araújo, I mean, of course, ranked number 10 from Brazil, holds wins over Roxanne Modafferi, Jennifer Maia, Andre Lee. This should be a legit matchup, should be fun. Depending how that July card, if it's in front of a crowd, I'd say this is a prelim fight. If it's at the Apex, I could definitely see this on the main card. Going down June 15th, which will be officially UFC Vegas 93. Wow, I wonder if we're going to get UFC Vegas 100 this year, which you may think, wow, the 100th event at the Apex. No, the UFC Apex is an abysmal place. But this is a heavyweight matchup between Andre Arlovsky and Martin Boudet. Andre Arlovsky, 23-17 in the UFC, 34-23 professionally. This guy is a former UFC heavyweight champion, former interim heavyweight champion, two-time Fight of the Night recipient. He's also held titles in M1. I mean, the pitbull Andre Arlovsky, one of the legends of the game. I think one of the only fighters from Belarus. Andre Arlovsky, still going strong. This man is 44 years old. Incredible. Still going strong. Actually, scratch that. He is 45 years old. He turned 45 February 4th. Andre Arlovsky might break the record for oldest fighter in the UFC. His op, Martin Boudet, 13-2, 4-1 in the UFC, just suffered his first loss to Shamil Gaziev back in December. Holds wins over Jake Collier and Chris Barnett. Not the most exciting fighter. He's there. But honestly, he will probably win. Martin Boudet will probably win, but I'll be rooting for Andre Arlovsky. Here's my favorite one. It was announced 2 hours ago. It's currently 4 o'clock Central Time, April 8th. Andre Munez will be taking on Ikrar Golgasarov at UFC Vegas 93. I don't know why this fight is in front of a crowd. This better be the co-main event. This middleweight bout is absolutely electric. Andre Munez, 24-6 professionally, 6-2 in the UFC. He has submitted Jun Young Park, Uriah Hall, and Ronaldo Souza. This guy has a nasty armbar. I mean, he broke Jacare Souza and Eric Anders' arms in back-to-back fights. Absolute killer. And only one performance of the night. One performance of the night. This guy is a submission expert. Returning after a big win over, was it Jun Young Park? I think it was Jun Young Park he beat, but can't really recall. His only two losses in the UFC are to Brendan Allen and Paul Craig, which are not too bad losses to have. Ikram Alkasarov, 15-1, 2-0 in the UFC. Those two fights in the UFC, both knockout wins. His 15-1 record, his one loss is to Khamzat Chimaev. This guy's an absolute killer. He knocked out Phil Hawes in round one. He knocked out Walray Alvarez in round one. I'm so excited to see Ikram Alkasarov fight. And I'm sorry, Andre Munez, I gotta ride with Ikram Alkasarov. I cannot believe that fight's not in front of a crowd. Such a shame. Also announced today, Piero Rodriguez will be taking on Ariana Carnelosi. Piero La Fiera Rodriguez will be taking on her on the May 18th card at UFC Vegas 92. We'll mention in a second, she was supposed to take on Cynthia Calvillo this past weekend. That fight obviously fell apart. Happy to see her getting rebooked. Ariana Carnelosi, 14-3 professionally. Actually holds wins over Ketlin Souza, Estela Nunes, Na Leong, all notable UFC fighters. We'll see how she does. And the most recent fight, which I am also very pumped about, going down at UFC 302 in Newark, New Jersey on June 1st. By the way, that June 1st card, it is rumored it's going to be Islam Makhachev versus Dustin Poirier. I cannot believe that might actually be the main event. I mean, I'm not bothered by it, but I'm just a little surprised they actually think Dustin... I don't know if the UFC actually thinks Dustin can win. I think it's more just to give the fans a fight that they'll pay for. But Suma Darji, currently ranked number 15th in the men's flyweight division, 14-5 professionally. He'll be taking on Joshua the Fearless Van. Joshua Van, 3-0 in the UFC. He's your favorite fighter's prospect. I mean, 10-1 professionally. All his wins in the UFC, Zalaga Sumaglagov, Kevin Borjas, and Felipe Bunez, all on short notice. Last one, he knocked him out in round two. Just an absolute banger of a fighter. And by the way, Joshua Van, only 23 years old. Actually, he's 22 at the moment. He turns 23 in October. October 10th, to be exact. Which actually means we are almost birthday twins because I'm October 1st. So, without a doubt, I'll be rooting for Joshua Van in that matchup. But That's all the fight news we got so far after UFC 300. I'm sure they're going to announce much more. But of course, UFC 300 will be going down this upcoming Saturday, April 13th. And make sure to tune in for a special Wednesday episode of the Surprise Jab podcast, where, yes, we are going to dedicate an entire episode to UFC 300 news. We're also going to be talking about the NBA and NHL as their season's wind to an end, and some new UFC news, but that's it. The rest of the show, all UFC 300. Once UFC 300's over, we kind of take a week off. I mean, NBA and NHL take a week off. There's no really big WWE stuff. The Final Four's over. So we're kind of going to have an off week on the Surprise Jab podcast, but you guys wait your turn, because we got some guests cooking up, including maybe potentially one tomorrow, Tuesday, April 9th. We may have a surprise guest, a returning member. We shall see. But new UFC news will be flooding in all the time. That's all we got for today's episode. And unlike past episodes, where we usually wait a bit to talk about UFC Vegas 90, we're going to get into it right now. So, of course, UFC Vegas 90 went down this past Saturday at the Apex. And I won't lie, it started off very promising. Kicking off the night, women's bantamweight action, Melissa Mullins and Nora Cornoli. And Nora Cornoli, very impressive, very impressive. I thought she might struggle with Melissa Mullins, especially because when Nora debuted in front of the France crowd, she was getting out grappled. But thanks to the crowd cheering for her, she kind of won that fight. In this one, Nora did outstrike Melissa 30-8 in round one, but was taken down one of three times for 3 minutes of control time for Melissa. Nora got right after it in round two, I should say, dropped her, kept the pressure, kept hitting her with knees to body in the clinch, and Nora Cornoli got her sixth career TKO and a round two knockout, gives her her second UFC victory. 8-1 now for Nora. As for Melissa Mullins, suffers her first professional defeat, very tough loss. As well, Melissa was ranked 15th. No longer. Nora Cornoli will debut in the UFC Bantamweight Women's Rankings at number 15. And if I could predict an opponent for her, I would say number 13th ranked Chelsea Chandler feels like a perfect option for her. Maybe even number 10 ranked Deanna Santos. I love her. I would love to see Nora Cornoli fight again, but, you know, we don't have many France fighters, and if we are going back to France in September, she might want to just, you know, stay healthy until then. I know that's 5 months away, but you'd be surprised how fast the year goes by. Next up, we got another TKO to start off the evening, and we predicted it almost correctly. We had Cesar Almeida round one TKO, and Cesar decided to wait till round two. Cesar taking on Dylan Boeke, of course, Dylan stepping on short notice. And round one, you could very much expect Dylan Boeke just going for takedowns. He went 2 of 4 for 4.5 minutes of control time. Cesar was able to outstrike him 43-6, but each man only landed one significant strike. I mean, Cesar was just kind of hitting him from the bottom, and I was about to say, like, Cesar, man, you know, he was only 4-0. I mean, all four of those were knockouts, but little did I know what I was going to expect, because as round two comes along, I soon learned Dylan Boeke is a one-dimensional fighter, only shooting for takedowns. And he wasn't even that skilled at shooting for him. Cesar Almeida outstrikes him 44-0 in the 2 minutes that round two lasted. 28 significant strikes to zero as he TKOs him with elbows to the head in the clinch. I mean, Dylan's really just holding on to him. It was pretty much Alex Pereira versus Jiří Procházka, how Alex won that. He's just hitting him with elbows. And, you know, Dylan went down, and that was that. Cesar Almeida, happy for you. 5-0 now. 5-0, and as a 36-year-old, 5-0, you know, the chances are slim of moving up if you ever lose. So if you keep getting your TKO, Cesar, you'll have some good luck. As for Dylan Boeke, yeah, I don't see Dylan coming back to the UFC. If they do, it'll be on one of these Apex card prelims, because he was not impressive. Not to be mean. I'm just calling it how it is. Happy for Cesar Almeida. I was also happy about our next matchup as Gene Matsumoto submits Dan Argueta in round number two with a guillotine choke. I was absolutely fired up about this result. Very happy about it. Gene Matsumoto getting his sixth career submission. He improves to 15-0 as he wins his UFC debut. And man, just, this was a crazy fight. I mean, round one, Dan Argueta landed 4 of 8 takedowns for 2 minutes and 45 seconds of control time, and really just had Jean down on the mat, you know. And this was very similar to the previous fight we just watched. Dan and Jean both landed only 6 significant strikes in round number 1, 26 total strikes to 8 in favor of Dan. You know, Dan was kind of getting the better of him, but nothing impressive. I mean, Jean Matsumoto was able to land a takedown. Then we get into round 2, and Dan lands 5 more takedowns until finally, you know, I mean, Gene even landed one. This was just such a random fight. And then Gene able to slinch in a little guillotine after he drops down into guard, and Dan tapped with 1 second left in the round. Wow. Just wow. Finals for the fight. 9 of 19 on takedowns for Dan Argueta. Gene Matsumoto went 2 of 4. 2 of 4. Not too bad yourself, Gene. Dan Argueta, I mean, I hate to say it, man. He's now 1-2 with 2 no contests. Both of those were wins that were overturned for him. I think Dan Argueta might be done in the UFC, I won't lie. Gene Matsumoto, though, just getting his career going. Gene is only, how old is Gene? 24 years old, 15-0. Yeah, I like guys like that. We'll see you again, Gene. Bantamweight division absolutely loaded. And next up, we had another Bantamweight matchup as Pedro Falcao stepped in on short notice to take on Victor Hugo, and Victor Hugo gets the unanimous decision win, just as we predict. Actually, we said Victor Hugo round 2 submission, but you know what? We'll take that victory. We correctly predicted Victor Hugo would get it done. Victor Hugo knocked him down, honestly, in round 3. I mean, and it was competitive. Victor was kind of outstriking him the whole time. Tolls for the fight. Victor Hugo, 68 significant strikes. Falco, 42. Toll strikes, 84 to 58 in favor of Victor. Pedro Falco went 1 of 13 on takedowns for 7 minutes of control time. A lot of that in the clinch. Wasn't the most exciting fight, but Victor Hugo walks away with the decision and wins his UFC debut. As for Pedro, I mean, I don't really know. I don't really know what to say, Pedro. This snaps a 5-fight winning streak for you. You know, he hadn't lost since 2018, but that's the risk you take when you step in on short notice. And I got to give him his flowers. Next up, we head to the women's bantamweight division as we got some ranked action between number 11 ranked Norma Dumont and former title challenger Jermaine Durandamy. And name of the game for this one is that Jermaine Durandamy was just a step behind. Just a step behind for this matchup. I mean, just it was just kind of clear that Norma was better. Norma was better. Nothing really happened, though. Nothing really happened. I mean, Norma Dumont, 6 of 8 on takedowns for 10 minutes of control time. Jermaine Durandamy outstruck her, 16 significant strikes to 11, 91 total strikes to 49, but all the judges knew Norma did enough. And it was just all takedowns. Rounds 1 and 3 went to Norma with the takedowns. Jermaine was able to get the striking going in round 2. But I mean, she ring rust. 3 years removed from her last fight, closer to 4. I mean, she just didn't have it. And I won't lie, as impressive as a win this was for Norma Dumont, it just kind of showed that Norma Dumont was kind of one-dimensional in her approach. At the same time, she might have been smart, not wanting to stand with Jermaine. But yeah, good win for Norma Dumont. Make it 4 straight. Make her 7-2 in the UFC. She, hasn't lost since 2021. Biggest win of her career right here. She'll probably move from ranked number 11 to ranked number 10, 9, or 8. I'd like to see Norma Dumont maybe take on someone like, maybe the loser of Holly Holm and Kayla Harrison. Maybe even number 8 ranked Carol Rosa, number 2 ranked Myra Bueno Silva. A lot of options for her. As for Jermaine Durandamy, I don't think she should go anywhere. Number 10, Yana Santos. Number 12, Julia Vila. Veterans like that, they can always use an opponent. So, Jermaine Durandamy, don't give up. Don't give up hope. Norma Dumont just had your number. She had your number grappling. Next up, we had our final prelim, but glad this fight was moved to prelims, as we had a heavyweight matchup between Lucas Brzezik and Walter Walker. That's right, the younger brother of Johnny Walker. And I'm sorry, Walter, but you seem to have fooled all of us, as I thought Walter Walker was this legit guy. I mean, I thought he was an absolute killer. 11-0, undefeated, with an insane 7 finishes of those 11 wins. And he lost to Lucas Brzezik. Now, did anyone really think he lost? No, I don't really think anyone thought he lost. I think the majority of people thought he won. Despite getting outstruck, the takedowns really seemed to be helping his favor. I mean, he landed 2 of 2 for 3 minutes, 16 seconds of control time round 1, 1 of 2 and 3, round 3 for 3 minutes of control time. But I mean, Lucas Brzezinski was just better on the feet. And I think, I mean, Valtor's build did not look the same as he did on the regional scene. Just kind of atrocious, I think the majority of people scored it 2-1 in favor of Volker Walker, but Lucas Brzezinski getting his first win since 2021, snapping a 3-fight losing streak. I don't even want to keep either of these guys. This is just atrocious unranked heavyweight action. And as the matchups keep coming and going, it's just the clear discrepancy between the top seven at heavyweight and the bottom, the rest of the entire heavyweight division in the UFC, the multiple fighters, is just so clear. I mean, Halton Almeida, Alexander Volkov, Curtis Blaydes, Sergey Pavlovich, Shogun, Tom Aspinall, they will wipe the floor with any of these guys. It's almost embarrassing, but hey, it is the Apex. What more do you expect? Final prelim of the night went to Alex Morono and Court McGee, and we correctly predicted it. We got it right. You already knew. Alex Morono gets it done against Court McGee. The round one knockout was right there, but Court McGee managed to hang in there. Oddly enough, Court McGee outstruck Alex Morono the entire fight. I was very perplexed by that. I honestly have no idea how Alex Morono won this statistically. Court McGee, 60 significant strikes, Alex Morono, 38. Court McGee, 78 total strikes, Alex Morono, 42. Court McGee, 1 of 6 on takedowns. Alex Morono didn't even attempt one. I did not watch this fight. I had no interest in it. But Alex Morono, back in the win column. First win since May of last year. Happy for him. Court McGee, oh, yikes. You're now on a 3-fight losing streak. And honestly, he has so many losses in the UFC. He has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 losses. 12 losses. Wow. You want to know how many wins he has? 12 wins. So maybe his next fight will determine if he stays or goes. But Alex Morono, good win. You will not last with any ranked welterweights. I can tell you that for a fact. Although I do like you, Alex. 33 years old. We'll see if maybe you can make a little late career turnaround. Who knows? Getting the main card going. It didn't start out too pretty. Okay, it did not start out too pretty. As Charlie Campbell took on Trevor Peak. And I just could not believe this. That Charlie Campbell had Trevor Peak's number. Despite Trevor Peak being one of the most entertaining fighters of all freaking time. Charlie Campbell, 2-fight win streak now for him. 2-0 in the UFC. Good stuff for him. 9-2 now. Good stuff. But Trevor Peak, you know, 1-2 in his last 3. Tough unanimous decision loss. But I mean, he never gave up. He never gave up. And at the end of the day, it just came down to the fact that Charlie Campbell grappled his way to a win in round number 3. Trevor Peak swinging till the end of the bell, shooting for wild takedowns. Even when he got rocked, he'd fire back. But yeah, and he actually signed a new fight deal with the UFC. He got a new contract, but despite losing this fight, that's how entertaining he was. So props to Trevor Peak, props to Charlie Campbell. You'll both stay in the UFC. Charlie Campbell, only 28, Trevor Peak, only 29. Maybe in 5 years, these guys will be fighting for the lightweight belt. We'll see, though. They got a long way to go. Moving on to another lightweight matchup as Ignacio Lajuala Bahomandez took on Christos Giagos the Spartan, and son of a gun, Ignacio Bahomandez gets another head kick knockout. Oh my goodness, I could not believe this. It was so entertaining. Ignacio Bahomandez getting his 10th career knockout. 10th career knockout. His 11th finish out of his 15 wins now. Super impressive. And I mean, just set it up perfectly, just tagging up Christos, hits him with the head kick. I mean, Christos wobbled for a second, then just fell down. That was that. Couple follow-up shots, barely 2 or 3, and Ignacio Bahomandez back in the win column. And how about a little 50K performance bonus to go on top of it? Bahomandez, we'll take it. Hell yeah. Hell yeah, Bahomandez. I absolutely loved it. Lives in Chicago, born in Chile, only 26 years old. I love him, man. Super entertaining. As for Christos Giagos, you are now 1-4 in your last 5 matchups. You've been finished in all of those in round 1 or 2. So, yikes from Christos Giagos. Might not be in the UFC much longer. Ignacio Bahomandez, you stay around. Around. Ignacio, I think him and Charlie Campbell would make a banger fight. Him versus Trevor Peak. It's always fun to just matchmake guys that are currently on the card. So those could be potential options, but Ignacio, man, lighting the world on fire. After that, we got into our fight of the night, which I knew going in would be a split decision. I knew it would be fight of the night. I actually said that on the pre-show. In my notes, I have fight of the night. I just predicted the wrong man to get it. Chepe Mariscal took on Morgan Cherie, and Chepe Mariscal gets the split decision nod. Let's look at the totals for the fight. Chepe outstruck him significantly, 71-49. Total, 121-75. Takedowns, Morgan Cherie goes 2 of 5 for 3 minutes and 42 seconds with one submission attempt. Chepe goes 1 of 8 for 3 minutes, 38 seconds control time. Just a chaotic fight. Chepe outstrikes him in round 1. Morgan outstrikes him in round 2. Chepe outstrikes him in round 3. Morgan landed a takedown in round 3. Just a back and forth matchup. Sadly, I missed this fight. I was actually at China Buffet having dinner. So, honestly, not too bad. I missed this fight, but it was amazing. It was fun. Chepe Mariscal improves to 16-6 professionally, 3-0 in the UFC. I don't really want to throw Chepe up in the featherweight rankings, but if he were to take on the loser of Diego Lopez and Sadiq Youssef this upcoming Saturday, I would not be opposed. Morgan Cherie, 1-1 now in the UFC. Your UFC debut in Paris, performance of the night, knockout. Your first UFC loss, a split decision fight of the night. This kid's going nowhere, okay? Just don't let the 10 losses fool you. Morgan Cherie is only 28 years old. He's been fighting killers since the get-go. He'll be back, and these two will definitely be squaring up down the line. I got a good feeling about that. Get into our co-main event. This one, another split decision action here. Thankfully, I predicted Damon Jackson winning. He beats Alexander Hernandez by split decision, and everything I saw was the judge Brian Miner scoring this fight 30-27 for Alexander Hernandez, when the real question was, did Alexander even win a round? I think Brian Miner should be fired for such a blatantly bad decision. Totals from the fight, Damon outstrikes him significantly, 42-32. Total strikes, 85-56 in favor of Damon Jackson. 3 of 7 on takedowns for 6 minutes, 18 seconds control time. Alexander Hernandez was somehow able to get 2 minutes, 22 seconds of control time. Round 1, Damon leans on the takedowns, 1 of 4, controls half the round, outstrikes him on the ground, 36-10. Damon takes round 1. No idea how a judge could even score that for Alexander. Round 2, though, Alexander was closer in striking, 23-19 significantly, 33-19 total in favor of Damon Jackson still, and he landed 1 of 1 takedown attempts for a minute 22. Round 3, Alexander Hernandez drops Damon Jackson, but Damon is still able to land a takedown, works his way back to the feet. Keep it competitive. All I know is the hair transplant worked, and the 31-year-old Damon Leach Jackson gets his first win since September of 2022. Impressive stuff. As for Alexander Hernandez, 2-fight losing streak. He's now 1-4 in his last 5. Let me even make it worse. He is 2-5 in his last 7. He is 3-6 in his last 9. He is 4-7 in his last 11. Yeah, Alexander Hernandez has not had the best luck as of late. I don't know much longer he's going to be in the UFC, man. His skill level is almost going down compared to where he debuted. This guy knocks up Benil Dariush in his debut. Now he's losing split decisions on Apex cards to Alexander Hernandez, to Damon Jackson. But Damon, good win for the featherweight. We'll see what's next for you. Maybe it's Morgan Cherie. Maybe it's Chepe Mariscal. Who knows? Y'all both just did fight back-to-back. But yeah, nothing really to say for these guys. Nothing really too entertaining. But then we did get to the main event, and I won't lie. This is my second favorite Apex event, probably of all the Apex events. Definitely the best main event of besides the first Apex card between Johnny Walker and Magomed Ankalaev is Brendan Allen and Chris Curtis. The nickname for Brendan Allen, All In. These two gave it their all for this matchup, but Brendan Allen takes the split decision. I know people were complaining online about this decision. I honestly scored it 4-1 for Brendan Allen, and I stand by it. Totals from the fight, Chris Curtis outstrikes him significantly, 124-112. Total strikes, Chris Curtis 141-128. Brendan Allen 6 of 13 on takedowns for 6 minutes of control time. Round 1, Brendan Allen lighting it up in the striking, 24 total strikes to 16, 22 significant strikes at 13, 1 of 1 on takedowns, 100% takedown rate. Brendan Allen takes round 1. Round 2, Chris Curtis, of course, on short notice, letting the hands go his best round of the fight. 46 significant strikes to 29 defends Brendan Allen's 1 takedown attempt. It's 1-1 and into round 3. Round three, very close. Both men land exactly 23 significant strikes. Brendan does land 8 more total strikes, 1 of 1 on his takedown attempts for 2 minutes of control time. That takedown sealed it for me. Brendan Allen takes round two. Round three, my bad. Brendan Allen heading into round four, outstrikes him 25 to 21, 28 to 21 in total strikes, 2 of 3 on takedowns, minute 24. I know people were scoring it for Chris because of his, you know, maybe some bigger shots, but I thought Brendan Allen did enough here, landed 2 takedowns, outstruck him. I had it 3-1, heading into the fifth, and Chris Curtis did outstrike him significantly, 21 to 13, total strikes 35 to 16. Brendan Allen only went 2 of 7 on his takedown attempts, but Chris Curtis, after rocking Brendan Allen and then Brendan Allen firing some shots back, tore his hamstring, or like hurt his hamstring really bad. But the final image the judges saw without knowing that he tore his hamstring was him just backed up against the cage, Brendan Allen laying into him with punches and kicks and stuff. So that's why I gave Brendan Allen round number 5. 49-46, I agree with Eric Colon, who scored it that way. Mike Bell scoring it 48-47 in favor of Chris Curtis. I mean, you can make a case for rounds 3 and 5, but I mean, just, I did not see it. I just didn't, and at the end of the day, when your guy's on the ground, I mean, he needs help standing up. That should be a telltale sign that he didn't win compared to Brendan Allen. Hands in the air, he's confident. I was happy with it. Brendan, all in, Allen extends his win streak to 7 fights. 7-fight win streak. Are you kidding me? Are you absolutely kidding me? Very impressive stuff. This is his 6th win at middleweight, as his win over Sam Alvey to kick off his win streak was actually at light heavyweight. So 6 straight at middleweight. Amazing stuff. He's currently ranked number 6. The number 5 guy, Marvin Vettori, hasn't gotten a win since 2022. So I say we put Brendan Allen in at number 5. Actually, Marvin Vettori won last March. My bad, Marvin. But Brendan Allen, much more exciting, much more bigger of a win streak. And he said he wants Driscus, but I think halfway through he kind of realized he's not going to get Driscus, so he called for Sean Strickland. I think the Sean Strickland fight writes itself. Brendan Allen has 2 losses in the UFC. One was to the guy he just beat. The other is to Sean Strickland. By the way, Chris Curtis and Sean Strickland, best friends. It writes itself. Cinema, if you will. But I mean, yeah, just this should have been fight of the night if you're asking me. The entire freaking Twitter space was blown up saying this is the fight of the year so far, or something like that. And I was kind of like, you know what? Honestly, it was. It was really exciting. It had me hyped towards the end. But yeah, again, no finish. No finish really sucks. It really sucks when there's no finish. It makes me sad. But you know what? That's all I gotta say. That's all I gotta say regarding this event. It was another Apex card. We are about to be blessed next upcoming weekend with UFC 300. Take my money, Dana. Take my money. 13 fights of pure perfection. I cannot wait to go over them all, and it is going to be one of our biggest coverage shows, if not our biggest coverage show to date. Make sure to stay tuned for that coming later this week. But you know what? Despite losing Cynthia Calvillo and Pierre Rodriguez, this card survived. Obviously, that is sarcasm. If no one caught that sarcasm, that would have been a very boring women's bantamweight fight. But yeah, it's all the UFC Vegas 90 action we got. Let's go over one more thing before we talk about WrestleMania 40, and that is March Madness, as March Madness is essentially coming to an end. I know. So sad. We're all crying. We're so depressed. We're so sad. It's been okay March Madness. I'll say that for certain. It's been okay March Madness. I think the one issue here is that, I mean, it's just like the 2 top teams are in it. It's like no shocker here. Let's talk about the 2 games that went down this past weekend and give our prediction for tonight's event. So, of course, Purdue and the NC State Wolfpack kicked us off. Purdue was 33-4 heading into this. They left 34-4 as they beat the Wolfpack 63-50. Aw, man. That's all I gotta say. It was close. It was close heading into halftime. I mean, 35-29. Wolfpack was only down by 6, and they were competitive the whole way. They were giving them some trouble. But, and you know, the start of the second half was pretty competitive, back and forth. But down the stretch, just a little 7-0 run. You know, that 9-point lead, they never really got back. The 6-point deficit, NC State never really got back, and they lose by 13. Points. And you know, it kind of sucks. No buzzer beater, nothing exciting down the stretch, just Purdue domination. Shout out to the NC State players, DJ Burns, 27 minutes played, only 8 points, 4 assists, and 1 rebound. He had his mid-range going for him, but I won't lie, he was just locked up. You know, he just couldn't handle Zach Edey. Just had the height is what I'm trying to get after here. Mohamed Daira, 2 points, 5 rebounds, just couldn't get a bucket in. DJ Horn, 20 points. So DJ Horn had two fifths of their points. I mean, oh, just ridiculous. 40% of the team's points came from DJ Horn, who played 39 minutes. He only rested for 1 minute. Ridiculous. Starting guard Casey Marshall played 32 minutes, only had 1 assist and 5 rebounds to show for it. Starting guard Michael O'Connell, 3 points. Actually, he only played 12 minutes. He must have got hurt or something. Jaden Taylor played 29 minutes, had 11 points. Ben Middlebrooks, 26 minutes played, 7 rebounds. They let Breon pass in for 9 minutes to get a 4 points. Nothing to say for NC State as all fall to the Purdue Boilermakers. Trey Kaufman-Wren dropped 7 points. Only played 16 minutes, though. Only played 16 minutes. Zach Edey and Braden Smith played the entire game. 40 minutes from both of them. Zach Edey was never out of the game. 20 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists. This guy's drag stopped is rising. Braden Smith, 3 points. Was able to drop into 3. Had 8 rebounds and 6 assists, though. We'll take that. Lance Jones, starting guard, 14 points on 38 minutes. Fletcher Joyer, 11 points on 33 minutes. And how about Mason Gillis? He got 24 minutes played. Was able to get 8 points. Good stuff. Good stuff all around. But Zach Edey just too freaking good. Field goal percentage, pretty similar. 22 field goals made for Purdue, 21 for the Wolfpack. 3-pointers, Purdue made 5 more, 10 compared to 5 for NC State. Free throws, though, only 4 free throws taken for the Wolfpack, 9 taken for Purdue. Only 1 was missed, and that was Zach Edey. Zach Edey took essentially all the free throws. Also got out-rebounded by 13, 41 rebounds for Purdue, 28 for the Wolfpack. Other than that, I mean, turnovers, Purdue actually had more fouls for the Wolfpack. Nothing really controversial in this game. I think when it was all said and done, everyone was just kind of like, Purdue's good. Purdue's good. That's all you can say. But we waited for a better matchup in the next game. And let me just tell you, UConn, man, just UConn. First half, Alabama is balling. Going into half, only down 4. I mean, they were up multiple times. They were trading back and forth. Mark Sears was absolutely balling. I was loving what I was seeing. Aaron Estrada was hitting shots. Grant Nelson was working in the paint. And then second half went down, and just UConn got a little lead, and they just never stopped slowing. UConn outscores them by 10 in the second half, wins 86-72, which means since last year's tournament, okay, they have won every single game for 2 tournaments now by double digits. Oh my gosh, I just cannot. UConn, just super, super athletic, super amazing. I mean, they've got at least their whole starting lineup, if not four of the five guys going to the league, drafted in round 1 this upcoming draft. Impressive, very impressive. Shout out to Mark Sears, though, of Alabama. 24 points, led the way for the team. Also had 5 rebounds. He was doing it all. Aaron Estrada, 13 points. He was trying. Grant Nelson, 19 points, 15 rebounds. I mean, come on. We love it. Nick Pringle, all right, your star center, only 2 points to show. Didn't even get a rebound in this one. Latrell Wrightsell Jr. had 6 points. Mohamed Diabate didn't get any. Sam Walters, nothing. It was a 3-man show between Sears, Estrada, and Nelson. And you can't beat a team with 3 guys. You can't. Even Jordan. You had Ron Harper and Dennis Rodman in there, okay? It wasn't just him and Pippen. All right, UConn. Man, oh man. I'll tell you that. I'll tell you, they're a 5-man show. Their entire starting lineup gets double digits. Oh my goodness. Cam Spencer, 14 points, 18 rebounds. Tristan Newton, 12 points, 9 assists. Alex Carabon, 14 points, 8 rebounds. Donovan Klingon, 18 bomb from him, 5 rebounds. Stephen Castle, 21 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, my bad. Hassan Daira had 5 rebounds. Actually, Hassan didn't score. How about that? Second Hassan. But, oh wait, he was on the bench. Samson Johnson had 7 points as well. They also let in, I kid you not, this is his name, one of their bench players, to just get some minutes at the end. Apostolos Romglou. Romglou and Solomon Ball. Got some fun biblical names going on here. Field goals, UConn had 5 more, 31-26. Three-pointers, Alabama actually hit more. Free throws, I mean, UConn went to the line 18 times. And despite getting so many rebounds, I mean, 38 rebounds to 31, only out-rebounded them by 7. Not too bad. Had more assists, though. I'll say the passing was more crisp from UConn. Had more blocks, more steals, less turnovers. But honestly, pretty even. Pretty even is just kind of similar to Purdue. They just pulled away down the end of the game, and there was no way that their opponent could catch them. So tonight, Purdue meets UConn, 34-4. Purdue Boilermakers take on the 36-3 defending champs, Connecticut Huskies. Oh my goodness, that game actually goes down in, I think, 3.5 hours or something. 8:20 start time Central, kind of brutal. Kind of brutal, I won't lie. I'm not really too fond of that. But when we kind of look at the path of both of these teams, I kind of want to assess which team had the tougher course to get to the Final Four. UConn blows out number 16 Stetson. Manhandles number 9 Northwestern. They face San Diego State, their team they beat to win the championship last year in the Sweet 16, blow them out by 30. Go to the Elite Eight against Illinois. First half is super close, and then they go on a 30-0 run, 77-52 total score to win. I mean, blow out Alabama by 14. It wasn't really a blowout, just beat Alabama by 14. UConn had a pretty easy path. Alabama, Illinois, and San Diego State were all legit teams. UConn was just way far superior. Purdue blows out Grambling State, number 16 seed in round 1 by 28 points. Blows out Utah State by, 39 points. 39 points. Utah State offering no challenge whatsoever. Is able to deal with Gonzaga in the Elite Eight, beats them 80-68, or Sweet 16, my bad. They did run into some trouble with Tennessee, though, in the Elite Eight, 72-66. Managed to have a little big 40 bomb from Zach Edey there. And then NC State, they offered some challenge, but at the end of the day, Purdue proved they were the superior team. And we get the number one team from the Midwest and the number one team from the East as they do battle in Arizona. How about that? Just from across the country of sorts, they're doing battle. Best of luck to both teams, but I mean, just UConn. I'm just not really going to bet against them. But if Purdue wins, it makes sense. Virginia lost to a 16 seed, came back and won it the year I went in 2019. Amazing, amazing tournament that year. And, Purdue does it. Good for them. I don't really care who wins. That's the thing. I have brackets with Purdue, brackets with UConn. It was a fun time overall, though. We'll do a quick little check-in with the women's Final Four as that came to an end. And I won't lie, this was a fun little ending. Fun little ending to the women's Final Four. The NC State Wolfpack was as well in the Final Four. They took on the South Carolina Gamecocks, who came in undefeated, and they left undefeated, beating the NC State Wolfpack they made by 19. Yikes. Tough to be an NC State fan as both your teams lose in the Final Four. Azia James dropped 20 points. Zoe Brooks dropped 12. River Baldwin, 12 points, 9 rebounds. Good for you. But South Carolina, Camila Cardoso, 22 points, 11 rebounds. Oh, my goodness. Kahina Papawa, 10 points. Raven Johnson, 13 points. They were just balling. Total rebounds, name of the game, Gamecocks out rebound them 46-32. Oh my goodness. Had 13 more field goals made. Gamecocks were not being stopped there as they advanced to the game. Oh, the championship game, but then we got into the best game of the tournament so far. It was better than the championship. Number 3 UConn, number 1 Iowa, and it did not disappoint. I was watching this at the bar with my buddies, and there was a table full of UConn fans right next to us, and man, it was so fun cheering for Iowa, because my cousin Ryan goes there. We actually had him on the podcast twice before. And then, Caitlin Clark, an absolute stud, drops 21 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. Hannah Stokey had 23 points for the Iowa Hawkeyes as they advanced to the championship. 71-69, it was so impressive. Huskies only had 6 players play the whole game. Paige Buechers, 17 points. Aaliyah Edwards, 17 points. KK Arnold, 14 points. It's not enough. as all fall to Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes. But as we got into the championship game, we soon realized that you can't beat the Gamecocks with a one-woman show. South Carolina wins 87-75 to complete a perfect season as they go 39-0. 39-0, the best record they could possibly have to win the Women's March Madness. And Chloe Kitts, 11 points, 10 rebounds. Camila Cardoso, 15 points, 17 rebounds. Tina Popoa, 14 points. Tessa Johnson, 19. I don't know who any of these women are. I'm just reading their names. Caitlin Clark's the only women's basketball player name I know. Not one lesbian who was locked up in a Russian prison. What was her name? Brianna Carter? Can't even recall. But Caitlin Clark, an absolute stud. 30 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists. It was actually 8 rebounds, 5 assists. She gets boards too, but man. Caitlin Clark, you are going to be a legend in the WNBA. I will watch Caitlin Clark play. I'll watch Caitlin Clark highlights. I won't watch anything else women's basketball. Hannah Stolke had 11 points. Kate Martin had 16. Sydney Affolter had 12. Yeah, that's all we know. Comes down to the stats. I mean, you're not going to beat the Gamecocks by not out-rebounding them. And the Gamecocks had 51 rebounds to the Hawkeyes 29. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This was a one-woman show at Caitlin Clark. Scored 30 of the 75 points scored. I mean, just round of applause. Good for the Gamecocks. Good for the Gamecocks. You know, they're a passionate team. I mean, dominant. They were the Roman Reigns of women's basketball. Unfortunately, the Cody Rhodes Iowa could not get it done. Maybe next year, Iowa. I say that sarcastically, as I know Iowa ball is probably going to be gonzo since Caitlin Clark is gonzo. So that's enough for March Madness. Of course, my prediction is UConn. You know, I'll have that game on tonight. I mean, it's the two best teams in the country. It's more fun, though, I'll say, in rounds 1 and 2. Sweet 16 as well. But once you get into the Elite Eight, the Final Four, the teams start to dwindle down. There's not as many games on. It starts to sink in that the time is drawing to an end. And right roughly 11 o'clock tonight, March Madness 2024 will come to an end. Well, I'll tell you what else came to an end last night, and that was the 1,360-day reign, 16-day reign, I mean, of Roman Reigns, the tribal chief. That's right, WrestleMania 40 went down last night and Saturday night. Let me just tell you, I felt like a little kid, that feeling when I was 12 years old watching John Cena and The Rock fight at WrestleMania 28. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker go back to back. They were Michael Jordan and, gosh, who did Michael Jordan? They were more like, I'm trying to think of some NBA. They were like Tom Brady going back to back. Incredible matches there. I'm watching Daniel Bryan win at WrestleMania 30, the best comparison I could give. Seth Rollins cashing in Money in the Bank. Just these moments, it was so amazing. Everything was just, it just couldn't have worked out better. It couldn't have worked out better. So we are going to go over all 13 matches that went down, recap both nights, and just give our thoughts on how perfect WrestleMania 40 was. Having Philadelphia as the choice for WrestleMania turned out to work out pretty well, as the crowd was really into it, but the one thing that was consistent both nights was the weather. It was very chilly, especially on night one, in the low 50s, dipping into the 40s, as usually WrestleMania is either in an outdoor or an indoor stadium or in a warmer area when it does outdoor shows, such as California or Florida. But this one actually worked out pretty well for the 40th edition of WrestleMania. Night one had an attendance of 72,543. Night two had an attendance of 72,755 for a combined attendance of two nights for 145,298. That is insane. That is absolutely insane. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. That's just incredible that they were able to sell out the exact same stadium two nights in a row. Celebrities were out in droves for this. Meek Mill was given the cold open, but we all know how we feel about Meek Mill now. You even had Coco Jones performing the Star Single banner, which was amazing. Lil Wayne debuted his latest single during the event. Yeah, he is, I don't really want to say washed because I like Lil Wayne, but he is kind of past his prime. We also had some Philadelphia Eagles appearing as well, which was fun. Night two saw the War and Treaty sing America the Beautiful, which was amazing. And you even had Snoop Dogg coming out, which was very odd. Very odd. Yeah, let's get into all the matches, talk about some of the storylines as we go through WrestleMania. Kicking off the show, we actually Started with the singles match for the Women's World Championship as Rhea Ripley took on Becky Lynch. This was entertaining, a good opening, and Rhea Ripley is so over with the WWE Universe. Of course, she retained, hit whatever finisher she hit to get it done. And even though Becky Lynch lost, you know, she's still beloved by the fans. But Rhea Ripley, man, she is going to hold on to her title belt for a while. The Women's World Championship remains with Rhea Ripley. And into the next match of night one, you had your six-pack tag team ladder match for the Undisputed WWE Tag Team Championships. And what I didn't realize is that they had a set of Raw tag team belts and a set of SmackDown tag team belts both above the ring. And so they were going to retrieve two different teams were going to retrieve each one to sort of split up the titles. So the first belts went to A-Town Down Under, Austin Theory and Grayson Waller, who were actually in a Joey Swole's TikTok video not too long ago. And the Awesome Truth, the Miz and R-Truth won the other belts. I was so happy to see that. R-Truth had never won at WrestleMania prior. Great moment for him. So happy for him. And the Miz. I mean, who doesn't love the Miz? As for Austin Theory and Grayson Allen, I think they're heels at the moment. So, of course, they had to fulfill their roles of doing that. But some great moments during this match. And I thought at one point the Judgment Day was going to win. I thought at another point the New Day was going to win. But I mean, jumping off the ladder through tables, being thrown off the top of the ladder through other ladders. Great moments in this match. This was a very good ladder match. And for having six teams in this, all the athletes worked out pretty well. Next up, you had Rey Mysterio and Andrade taking on Santos Escobar and Dirty Dominic Mysterio. And who would come out to save the day in this 11-minute match? Well, none other than Jason Kelsey and Lane Johnson of the Philadelphia Eagles. Jason Kelsey, former Philadelphia Eagle, officially retired now. But they come out in lucha wrestling masks, help Rey Mysterio win. Great moment for the crowd there. Absolutely loving it. And Jason Kelsey, by far more than Travis Kelsey, the likable brother. So, yeah, fun moment. Rey Mysterio and Andrade winning. Happy to see it. They're also part of a group called the Latino World Order, which I believe is an old faction that has been revitalized. After that, you had one of the most hype matches for night one, which was Jey Uso versus Jimmy Uso. And unfortunately, you know, the storyline for this matchup was so good. The history between the brothers, the bloodline breaking. But this just fell flat. And I mean, Jey Uso is clearly the superior Uso when it comes to performing. They didn't really have that many big spots. Jey Uso ended up just winning after an 11-minute match. That's all I got for you. Nothing too big here. And I mean, if I could give this a grade, it gets a 6 out of 10. It gets a 6 out of 10. Same for Rey Mysterio and Andrade, a 6 out of 10. A good 6 out of 10. This one was a dull 6 out of 10. Ladder match gets a 7. And I'm going to give Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch a 7.5 out of 10. After that, you had a 6-woman tag team match. And a pretty cool entrance, might I add, for Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair, and Naomi. They had a pretty cool entrance. I like their theme music, whatever it was. It was had kind of like an old rock star type of beat to it. But now Jade Cargill, whoever she is, she's super over with the WWE Universe. People like her. She's kind of weird if you ask me. But you know what? Good win for them. I don't really know if there's history there or not. Got to our second last match of the night, and it was the Intercontinental Championship match between Gunther and Sami Zayn, and Gunther was the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time at 666 days, and he lost the belt. How satanic of him losing on this day, but I was very surprised. Sami Zayn won this matchup. He started it off walking backstage. They show him talking to his wife and kid. He then runs into Chad Gable, who had been training him for this matchup. He then runs into his old buddy, nemesis, rival, Kevin Owens, who tells him to go get it done. And by gosh darn it, Sami Zayn ends the reign of Gunther. He's getting beat up the whole match. Then as Gunther goes to the top rope, Sami Zayn hits him, goes and lands a brain buster. Oh my gosh, which is essentially you have the guy on your shoulders, just like you're grabbing his head, his whole body's up there, and you come down and you kind of like give him a brain buster. He goes down, he falls to the corner. Sami Zayn hits his haluva kicks where he just boots the guy through the face 3 times in a row, and he wins the Intercontinental Championship in a 15-minute match. Good moment for Sami Zayn, great WrestleMania moment. And I had a feeling he would win, especially once we got to the next match, which was the tag team match between the Bloodline, The Rock, and Roman Reigns, and Cody Rhodes and the World Heavyweight Champion Seth freaking Rollins. And oh my goodness, this match did not disappoint. This truly was the greatest tag team match in WrestleMania history. Holy cow, 44.5 minutes of just pure excitement and cinema, just great moments across all action. Absolutely loved it. entrances, Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins, weren't doing too much since they're, you know, they were wrestling night two, so they weren't going to do anything big, but the crowd was still loving them. They come out, Seth Rollins was in some goofy attire, Cody Rhodes in his Homelander looking suit coming out, looking amazing. They're waiting in the ring, and then The Rock comes out and looks like the biggest badass of all time. His music was hitting, he was standing in a Brahma Bowl logo of fire. He had this championship belt that Muhammad Ali's great-granddad gave to him that had like a bull on it. Holy cow, he truly was the final boss. The arms on The Rock, I gotta get his arm day, man. Unless he's taking steroids, then I gotta hop on them too, because I mean, oh my gosh, that boy was jacked. Tattoos just work for The Rock. I was loving it. Then Roman Reigns came out, the crowd was loving it, and we got the action going. All right, we got the action going. If the Bloodline won, then it'd be Bloodline Rules match for night two, when Cody Rhodes would take on Roman Reigns. And back and forth, they were fighting up the ramp, they were fighting out in the crowd. The Rock looked like he had never left the WWE before. Match is just going. They're finally back in the ring, they're doing some tags actually. And the whole thing was that The Rock was on the board of directors with WWE, so the ref wouldn't count him out for cheating. Very interesting aspect they took there with the storyline. And the moments to end this match were absolutely crazy. I mean, you had Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins both eating rock bottom spears, and you thought it was over. No, they kick out. You thought Roman Reigns, once he was hit with three, what are they called? Rhodes? What is Cody Rhodes' finisher? Whatever his finisher is when he does like oh my gosh, it's killing me. They were saying it all last night, and I completely elapsed my mind. We have to find him. You have to find out whatever his crossroads, that's what it is. Hits the crossroads. Grant basically has the guy holding his head backwards, kind of picks him up and kind of just slams him into the mat. Terrible description, but you kind of get the point. He hits his finisher three times. Just when you think that the Roman's about to get about to lose, The Rock yanks the ref out of the ring, and then The Rock gets rock bottom through the table by Cody Rhodes. Then Roman Reigns spears Seth Rollins through the freaking barricade. It was absolutely electric, unbelievable. And then we freaking, you know, we're in the ring. They're all going at it. And then basically, I mean, The Rock accidentally gets speared by Roman. But first off, The Rock's faces throughout this were absolutely amazing. That boy is so good at selling. I forget why he's probably on. If there's multiple Mount Rushmores, he's on one of the Mount Rushmores of professional wrestling. This made me fall back in love with The Rock. They then hit Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins hit The Rock and Roman Reigns with double, oh my gosh, what is Triple H's Fisher's? Double pedigrees. And oh my gosh, I thought it was over. Then they both kick out at the same time. And the finishing sequence was so fire. Seth Rollins gets taken out outside of the ring. Cody Rhodes, alone in the ring, gets hit with a spear, then gets hit with a rock bottom, then gets hit with the people's elbow, and The Rock and Roman Reigns walk out victorious on night number one. It was so electric. I was like, how are they going to top this? How are they going to top this night two? Because this match was absolute fire. Absolute fire. I cannot get enough of it. And man, it just really makes you remember just how good wrestling is. Just mwah, chef's kiss on top of it all. We then get into night number two of WrestleMania. I was riding high. I'm like, how are you going to top that? And we kick off the night with Drew McIntyre taking on Seth Rollins for the World Heavyweight Championship. And this was, you know, it was a finisher fest. I won't lie. A lot of curb stomps, a lot of pedigrees, a lot of, Drew McIntyre's running kick, whatever it is, Celtic kick, whatever. But I mean, honestly, it was entertaining. What's his face got put through the table? I think Seth Rollins did. But no, Drew McIntyre hits him with the boot to end it, and Drew McIntyre becomes your new World Heavyweight Champion. You would see him punk at ringside commentating, which was absolutely amazing to see. Fun stuff between these two. And then after Seth Rollins lost, you know, he's so emotional. You know, he's telling Drew, like, it's your time now. You know, you deserve this, but you know what? It's your time now. And leaves. Seth Rollins goes up the ramp. Drew McIntyre goes up on the announce table, is celebrating in front of CM Punk. CM Punk has enough of the taunting, takes off his, I don't even know what it was, cast or freaking whatever thing was holding his tricep, his arm in place, which is hurt. And he starts beating Drew relentlessly with it, just beating him. And then Damian Priest, your Money in the Bank holder, comes running down the entrance ramp, throws Drew inside the ring, hits him with whatever spear, finish. finisher freaking choke slam he has, pins him, and Damian Priest beats Drew McIntyre to become the new World Heavyweight Champion. It was so electric. That is how you start off night two of WrestleMania. I mean, the place was going electric. They were loving it. Absolutely so much fun. Drew McIntyre's World Heavyweight Championship reign ends in 5 seconds. So, ended in 9 seconds, had it for about 5 minutes. But the storyline was so good here because Drew McIntyre was so obsessed with, being champion. And, you know, he was taunting CM Punk. He was obsessed with CM Punk. And CM Punk ended up being his downfall. And even better is back in 2020, Drew McIntyre was supposed to main event WrestleMania against Brock Lesnar in front of a live crowd. Of course, COVID changed that. So he had to main event against Brock Lesnar in front of an empty arena. So Drew McIntyre finally got his world championship win in front of a crowd. But he also lost the belt to Damian Priest. So we'll see what happens on Monday Night Raw when Damian Priest comes out as the new world champion. But Drew McIntyre, you are hilarious. And I can't wait to see CM Punk and him feud. That's going to be an electric feud. After that, we have the Pride, Bobby Lashley, Angelo Dawkins, and Montez Ford taking on the Final Testament, Karrion Kross, A-Cameron Razor in a Philadelphia street fight with Snoop Dogg as the special guest commentator and Bubba Ray Dudley, Philadelphia native, as the special guest referee. Just chaos. You had ladders, you had chairs, you had candlesticks. I mean, people were using any weapons they could, but I mean, this lasted 8.5 minutes. It was just to kind of get the crowd, lighten them up a bit after the excitement they had just seen. Bubba Ray Dudley was having Montez Ford jump off, hit the kind of a signature that him and Devon and Bubba Ray Dudley, Dudley's legendary tag team, had them hit their signature, grab the tables, they got tables out, sent Karrion Kross through them, and got the victory. Fun stuff with the Pride. I was honestly surprised they were giving all the good guy tag teams, all the babyface tag teams, the victories, which I was happy to see. It was fun, light stuff, good times. After that, you had LA Knight take on AJ Styles, and LA Knight was a big, all about the Slim Jim advertisements. He gave a car away to some people for Slim Jims. So goofy, him and AJ Styles had a typical match. AJ Styles coming out to a different theme song than he's had his whole career, which is very goofy. Don't know how I felt about that, but wasn't too bad. LA Knight got it done, hit his typical finisher. This was a typical match, you know, nothing too exciting. Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins probably gets an 8 out of 10. The Pride match probably gets a 6 out of 10. LA Knight, AJ Styles gets a solid 7, just a typical 7. After that, we got some excitement. We got an 8.5 match right here. Logan Paul, your United States champion. That's right, Logan Paul, of all people, the former TikToker, Viner, YouTuber, is now a WWE champion. I can't believe how much natural-born talent he has. I can't believe how likable he is, even though he's a heel. Taking on Kevin Owens and Randy Orton in a triple threat match. This was so entertaining. Great spots. You had Randy Orton and Kevin Owens teaming up on Logan Paul. Logan Paul coming out in a giant armored Prime truck. Then Kevin Owens comes out in a tiny little golf cart that says KO on it, his initials. He picked up Randy Orton when he came out at the top of the entrance ramp, drove him down. Funny moments all around. And man, yeah, Randy Orton and Kevin Owens teaming up on Logan Paul to start off the match. Then they start going at it. RKOs. I mean, Kevin Owens kicked off an RKO. Logan Paul's athleticism is ridiculous. Jumping off the hop rope, doing top rope, doing spins and freaking flips and stuff. And eventually, there was a Prime guy, you know, he's a little Prime logo guy who was cheering at ringside. And it turned out it was iShowSpeed, the freaking streamer. I could not believe he was out there. And Randy Orton hit with an RKO on top of the announce table. A lot of F-bombs being dropped from iShowSpeed, which I thought was hilarious. But then inside the ring, Logan Paul hits a giant frog splash on Kevin Owens and pins him to win. Loved it. Fun. Logan Paul. You're electric. You're electric. I'll give it to you. I'm excited to see where all these guys go from here. I'm hearing rumors maybe Randy Orton or will be feuding with Cody Rhodes, perhaps. You could even have Logan Paul feud with Kevin Owens after this. I like wherever they go, but this was a fun, fun match. Then had your second to last match of the evening as Bayley took on Io Sky, your current WWE Women's Champion. And Bayley, you know, Royal Rumble winner, gets it done, beats Io Sky. This was a fun match. I'll give it a 9 out of 10. Actually, I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. Yeah, it was okay. We were all ready for the main event, Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. So this was here, Bayley, your new champion. It makes sense. Her first championship win at WrestleMania in a singles match. I'll be interested to see who she defends it against first. And with that, With that, we were down to our final match of WrestleMania, the main event of night 2, the official main event of WrestleMania 40. WrestleMania 40. It's even weird to say, as the tribal chief Roman Reigns and his 1,316-day reign took on the American Nightmare Cody Rhodes, who had one last opportunity to win the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. And it was in a Bloodline Rules match where anything goes, anything can happen. And this match went 33 minutes and 25 seconds. And let me tell you, let me just tell you, this was a critically acclaimed match. This was the greatest WrestleMania match of all time, and I don't even say that. I don't even say that because of recency bias. I say that with the utmost confidence. I say that with the utmost sincerity, is that this was the greatest wrestling match I've ever seen in my entire life. And I've been watching wrestling now since, 2008? Since I was 6 years old, for 15 years. I've never felt what I felt watching that main event. It was utterly insane. We got it kicked off. First off, the entrances. Cody Rhodes coming out in this skull mask. He's got the American Nightmare gear on. Brandy, his wife, comes out. She's wearing some American Nightmare stuff. Gives him a kiss, takes off his helmet, and Cody Rhodes goes to work. And the whoa, you know, he has a theme song where it's kind of like, adrenaline in my soul, da-na-na-na-na. And it goes, and then it hits in the song, and it goes, whoa, and all the crowd goes like, whoa, with it. And man, they were absolutely electric, loving it. He's in the ring. We're waiting. And then an orchestra hits, and you have choir singing Roman Reigns' song. You have the drums pounding, the instruments going, and Roman Reigns walks out, lifts the belt in the air, the six-pack, the muscles. He looks like a true champion. The fireworks are going off. And then it was game time. It was time to lock in for Roman Reigns as he went to work. And these two, for the first 20 minutes of this 33-minute match, just went at it. They went at it. There was some candlestick action, almost a table. Great wrestling. They were going up the ramp. They were into the crowd. Just suplexes, power punches. I mean, they were going at it. And then eventually, Cody Rhodes started getting the better of Roman Reigns. I mean, Roman Reigns could only do so much. He's about to hit him with a third crossroads when Jimmy Uso, one of the members of the Bloodline, comes in and super kicks Cody Rhodes. And you're like, oh man, here it goes. But then Jey Uso's music hits. His brother, who he beat the other night, runs down. And then him and Jimmy are going at it. And then Jey spears him off the top of the entrance ramp through some hidden tables. It was absolutely epic. They go back to work. Cody Rhodes taking on Roman Reigns. And yet again, Cody Rhodes starts to get the better of Roman Reigns. And just like last year, Solo Sikoa appears, hits him with a little thumb to the throat. And you're thinking that might be it for Cody Rhodes. Roman Reigns might get the better of him. And then he hits him with a spear and he kicks out. All right, go through it again. Roman Reigns hits Cody Rhodes with another spear. I actually thought this was it for maybe a split second, but no, Cody Rhodes kicks out, and Solo Sikoa starts getting super angry, starts getting intense, telling Roman to get after it. Roman's like, I got this. Then John Cena, my favorite wrestler of all time, John Cena appears, and he comes down, and he slides in, and he's whooping Solo, sends him over the top rope, little add to adjustment through the announce table. It was absolutely crazy. You hear the excitement in my voice right now. I was losing my mind. I was on the mic with my buddy Tyler, my first ever friend ever since kindergarten. We've been watching wrestling together ever since then. And holy cow, we were losing our minds. And then John Cena staring off into Solo Sikoa's body laying across the announce table. And The Rock's music hits, and The Rock's coming down, looking like the final boss in his white suit. Got the Mama Rhodes belt on, which he put Cody Rhodes' blood all over. And he's coming down, he's yelling the F word, he's cussing, he's saying, get out of my ring. John Cena slides in the ring. The Rock's in the ring. And once again, The Rock and John Cena face to face at WrestleMania. But they weren't friends this time. No, no, no. The former main eventers of 28 and 29 giving a stare down. John Cena hit him with the five knuckles. Hit him with the you can't see me. Went to punch him. The Rock lifts him up, rock bottom, middle of the ring. Tells him to get the F out of his ring. He then takes out of his lifting belt, ready to beat Cody Rhodes senseless with it. Then the Shield's music hits. The old group of Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins. And I thought Dean Ambrose was coming out for a second, but no. Seth Rollins comes running down. Actually, he snuck in through the crowd in his old Shield gear, the old group, and he comes in, slides into the ring, ready to take out The Rock, and then Roman Reigns appears out of nowhere, and Superman punches him, knocking Seth out, and you were thinking, oh man, There's no one left, and The Rock is telling Cody to get up. He's ready to beat him. And then the gong hits, the gong for the Undertaker's entrance music, and the crowd pop was insane. It was one of the greatest crowd pops in WrestleMania history. Dare I say WWE history? I'm getting out of breath right now, ladies and gentlemen. And The Rock looking up the entrance ramp, he's like, come on, come on, bring it. And the Undertaker appears right behind him once the lights came back on, hits him with a chokeslam. The Rock's face was just absolutely bewildered. Chokeslams him down to the ground, and then lights cut again, and the Undertaker is gone. Then it's Seth Rollins in one corner, Cody Rhodes in another, a chair in the middle. Roman Reigns picks up the chair, ready to hit Cody Rhodes. He could have finished the story. He could have beat Cody Rhodes and retained. But no, 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 no. The Roman Reigns remembered back in 2014 when Seth Rollins betrayed him and Dean Ambrose and hit him in the back with a steel chair. And just because WWE is some of the best cinema, the best storytelling of any movie, TV show on the planet, it tells stories, it has Easter eggs, it goes back in time. Just like how Seth Rollins hit Roman Reigns in the back and betrayed him, Roman Reigns gets his revenge and hits Seth Rollins in the back with the steel chair. Rollins goes down. And Rollins, a couple weeks earlier, had said, don't worry, Cody, I'll be your shield. Rollins sacrifices himself. Then Roman, thinking Cody Rhodes is out of it, goes, does his, ooh, ready to hit the spear, runs at him. Cody hits him with a knee, hits him with not one crossroads, not two crossroads, picks him up one more time, barely able to lift him, hits him with a third crossroads. And as Cody Rhodes pin him, you see a little smile on Roman Reigns' face as he knows it is the end of an era and the beginning of the new, as the ref counts three and Cody Rhodes does it. He beats Roman Reigns in a 5 out of 5, 10 out of 10, 100 out of 100, the greatest wrestling match I have ever seen in my entire life. And I legit watched a 30-minute celebration of them in the ring. The crowd was going crazy. The announcer, she could barely even announce that Cody had won. She was cheering so loud. It was absolutely amazing. You had CM Punk down there. You had Randy Orton, John Cena. LA Knight was down there. I mean, I saw Logan Paul was recording a TikTok in the crowd, and he was losing his mind because he's a fan just as much as we are. You had Brandy, his wife. You had his nieces and nephews, his mom, his sister. Triple H came down. I mean, Undertaker might have been in there. I don't even know. Everyone was there. They're lifting him up high. It was crazy. And as The Rock, Roman, they all disappeared up the ramp. Roman embraced Paul Heyman one last time, secretly at the top of the entrance ramp, as the end of his era ended and the beginning of the American Nightmare Cody Rhodes began. Just wow. Just wow. I have never felt that before as a wrestling fan. It was like everything. I was seeing all my childhood heroes, The Rock, John Cena, Undertaker, all going at it. I was seeing just Cody Rhodes, the underdog, finally getting it done. That was the greatest WrestleMania, I think, of all time. I mean, WrestleMania 30 is up there. It's a close contender, but this one had it all. This one had the moments. And for having a 9.9 match out of 10 on night one, they have a 10.10. I mean, I don't even know what to say. Just back-to-back 10 out of 10 matches is all I can really say. And this one just takes the cake. This is the greatest wrestling match of all time. I mean, it's hard to argue what else. Obviously, you can look at all technical wrestling, but the moments, the crowd, the story, nah, nothing tops that. WrestleMania 40, one of the best experiences I've ever had. And it's hard to let it go, man. It's hard to let go. It's hard to accept it's over. But I have to accept that this is no more and that we will move on to next year's WrestleMania, which might be in Minnesota, so I might have to save up my money if I want to go to it. Gonna cost me a couple hundred, maybe a couple thousand of dollars. But man, WrestleMania 40, Philadelphia, I give you my props. Triple H, Paul Levesque, the best. He is going to take this place in a whole, he's going to take WWE in a whole great direction. Mr. McMahon was driving it down to the ground, and Triple H said, you know what? Hold my cup. I got you. His storytelling's great. He knows what the fans want. He knows what to do. I'm such a big fan. Such a big fan. Oh, man, ladies and gentlemen. That does it. Wow, I'm gassed. I'm ready to go do something. I'm ready to get hype. I'm ready to go wrestle someone. I don't know. Maybe I'm just going to go tackle Seth in his room. Who knows? But man, WrestleMania 40, I will never forget you. UFC Vegas 90, we'll forget this. March Madness, we'll probably forget this March Madness. But WrestleMania 40, we will not forget you. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all I have. Stay tuned this week for more huge episodes of the Surprise Jab Podcast. And oh yeah, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jet Podcast. Could have executed that better. But I'll catch you all next time. Have a great week.